Hi, everybody. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. At the end of July, we checked in on Cuba after historic demonstrations erupted across the country, in which thousands protested the severe economic crisis, the mismanagement of the pandemic, and government restrictions on civil liberties and freedoms. According to Cubalex, an NGO tracking arrests in the country, the Cuban government has cracked down on dissenters, arresting more than 800 Cubans in the days and weeks since the July protests began. At the same time, the country's healthcare system has struggled to keep up with the spike in COVID-19 cases and deaths. In response to the surge in cases, Cuban healthcare workers have taken the unprecedented step of posting social media videos criticizing the government's response to the pandemic on the island. The Cuban government has tried to limit online dissent with a new law labeling many critical posts as fake news and banning their creation and distribution. For more on this, I'm joined by Patrick Ottman, a CNN international correspondent and Havana bureau chief. Welcome back to the show, Patrick.
Thank you so much.
All right, Patrick, last time we talked, we heard that hundreds of demonstrators had been arrested. Do you know if folks have been released? Are there still people who have been detained?
There are still many people who are detained and facing trial. Some of the cases that have gotten publicity or just that there was nothing really there behind the charges those people were facing, they have been released. And we have asked the Cuban government, as have other journalists, how many people are detained, how many people are still facing trial, and they just refuse to answer that. But we do know it's in the hundreds. Some people have already been sentenced for up to a year simply for being out on the street when the protests were happening, for filming the protests, for live streaming the protests, and other people who the Cuban government accuses of trying to encourage people to protest or breaking into stores or fighting with police. Those people face far more serious charges. But certainly there are hundreds of people now that continue to remain behind bars and likely will face some serious prison time.
And Patrick, do you have a sense of the conditions of detainment for folks who have, in fact, been detained?
So I've talked to relatives and some people who were convicted but then released on appeal. And they say to me that they never had access to attorneys, that they were tried in a mass trial, you know, with 20 other people. They didn't know who they were or they weren't involved with what those people did. And that essentially these trials took place in a day, and that they were all of a sudden sentenced to a year or more in prison. The Cuban government says that everyone has the right to an attorney, that children were not arrested or facing trial, and yet there's a lot of evidence that seems to indicate that what they've said to us is not true.
And again, because American audiences often don't know much about what's happening on a day-to-day basis in Cuba, it's this kind of detention and these mass trials and sort of the inability to defend oneself. Is that relatively new? Is it just surprising relative to the size and scope? Or is this something that is consistent?
Of course. We've never seen it on this scale, but it is consistent with the Cuban justice system, which most outside observers would say is not an independent justice system. You don't have the judges overruling the government or letting people go. We just haven't seen it on this scale before, because what happened on July 11th and afterwards never really happened in decades in this country, where you had thousands of people, not just here in Havana, but across this island, literally every major city and a lot of small towns on this island, thousands of people coming out and saying that they'd had enough, that they were angry about the handling of the pandemic. And then just so many people coming out and saying they wanted freedom, that they felt that they had not had freedom in their lifetimes. And that is something that they were demanding. And the government responded very, very harshly by cracking down, by cutting off the internet. And now with these mass trials, and as well trying to essentially warn people about their use of social media in the future.
Let's talk a little bit about the doctors and healthcare workers who are sort of doing this online social protest around the COVID pandemic. What kind of prompted this?
It really is one of the more extraordinary things I've seen in 9 years of living in here and reporting full-time on Cuba. But the COVID situation is very, very dire here. Even though Cuba did take the very impressive step of coming up with their own vaccines, that delayed deploying those vaccines. And Cuba, for the longest time, has not accepted vaccines from other countries. They said, no, we can do this. We have a biotech industry. We're going to not only come up with vaccines for ourselves, but we can sell them overseas, but that meant that they vaccinated a lot later, began vaccinating a lot later than other countries. And with the Delta variant, it has just overwhelmed hospitals here. We're already, a lot of medicines were in short supply. And in the midst of the worst of this crisis, you had the Cuba's prime minister go to a really hard-hit province and start criticizing the doctors, who are usually treated as heroes and have been working around the clock 7 days a week on the front lines of really a worsening crisis. And he said that the complaints that a lot of people have been voicing more and more openly, that the doctors bore some of the responsibility for the problems that we've seen. And a number of doctors, now dozens of them, came out using their names, showing their faces on social media, recording videos and saying that the healthcare system has collapsed, that there's no medicine, that there has been shortages of oxygen that has caused people to die, that the government has not been honest about the COVID numbers of cases and deaths, and it's much, much worse than the government's been letting on. And this is really unprecedented because doctors, of course, work for the government here. If the government decides that a doctor has embarrassed the government or has broken their regulations, that's the end of that doctor's career, or could be worse. They could, under these new laws, perhaps face some legal penalties. So it's quite a brave move for these doctors to come out. It shows that they feel they have nothing left to lose. And so far, we've not heard about any of these doctors actually losing their jobs. They're just in such short supply right now. But certainly, they're going to have a black mark next to their names. The government is very upset that these doctors took this unprecedented step to come out and criticize the government's handling of the pandemic.
It's such an interesting point, though, Patrick, that the pandemic itself also gives them sort of relative power that they might not typically have, because you simply can't do without all of your potential healthcare providers.
They're bringing doctors back from countries around the world where they sent doctors, countries like Cuba's ally Venezuela and countries that have been paying for those doctor services that are also hard hit by the pandemic. Now Cuba's pulling those doctors back because they don't have enough doctors here. And you're hearing not only about people dying because they don't have basic medicines here to treat COVID, but also dying because they don't have medications for cancer treatment and other things that, you know, typically you would have medicine here for. And you go into hospitals now and they are overrun with COVID patients. They are lacking basic medicines. And even people who are able to find the medicines in the black market, when they go to the hospitals to give those medicines to the doctors for their relatives, the doctors say, we're not allowed to use those medicines unless you can show me a receipt that you bought them at a pharmacy. But of course, the pharmacies are absolutely empty here. They're completely picked over. And so people are very, very frustrated that the government can't seem to treat people, but then doesn't let you find the medicines if you were able to track them down.
And it's worth noting that hurricane season is not over yet, that Hurricane Ida just passed through as a Cat 1. I'm wondering, given the conditions you've just described, what happens if a larger hurricane comes to Cuba?
It really could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. I've talked to government officials, and they've said they're basically, you know, crossing all their fingers it doesn't happen, because, of course, like anywhere else in the world, even though Cuba has a lot of experience with hurricanes, they knock out the power for weeks. They cause major disruptions. And really, that has been one of the things that kicked off the protests, that when the government, which already is cash strapped because there's been no tourism during the pandemic, is already seeing disruptions in the power grid just on a regular daily basis. And it was in the small town near Havana, power outages that had lasted about a week that didn't have anything to do with a hurricane. But that's what caused people initially to go into the street. And then we saw that cascade effect across this island. So if a hurricane were to come, as they have in the past, and knock out the power in much of this island for days or weeks, you could expect there to be civil disturbances. People really feel that they are kind of the end of their rope. And something like that, which of course would disrupt the food supply and slam this government already when they're on their knees, would probably have some major ripple effects. So people, certainly in the government, are praying that doesn't happen. But of course, it's up to Mother Nature.
Patrick Ottman is a CNN international correspondent and Havana bureau chief. Thanks again, Patrick.
Well, thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.